I remember the first time I stood in a room with a pile of expensive primed pine at my feet, and a miter saw that felt like it was speaking a different language. It is a strange thing, looking at a straight piece of wood and trying to imagine how it is going to nestle into a corner that is probably not even square to begin with. You are standing there, looking up at the junction where the wall meets the ceiling, and it looks simple enough, just a line. But crown molding is the great deceiver of Finnish carpentry. It does not sit flat against the wall like a baseboard, and it does not sit flat against the ceiling like a decorative medallion. It hangs in the air at an angle, bridging that gap, and that is exactly where most people start to feel the sweat on the back of their neck. I want you to take a breath and realize that we are not just cutting wood today. We are learning how to see the geometry of a room and how to forgive the house for its imperfections. Before we even pick up a tool, we have to talk about what this material actually is and how it behaves. When you hold a piece of crown molding, you will notice it has two flat edges on the back, which we call the flats or the fences. One is for the wall and one is for the ceiling. If you hold it up in the air, you can see how it creates a little hollow triangle of dead space behind it. That is the magic of the profile. It adds depth and shadow, but it also means that when we put it on the saw, we have to think upside down and backward. This is the part that trips up almost everyone. I once spent an entire Saturday afternoon in a small powder room trying to wrap my head around a simple outside corner. I cut the piece, held it up, and it was a perfect mirror image of what I actually needed. I got frustrated, went back to the saw, and did the exact same thing again. I wasted 20 feet of molding and ended up sitting on the floor, just staring at the ceiling. What I realized then, and what I want you to know now, is that the saw bed represents your ceiling, and the saw fence represents your wall. We cut the molding upside down, because that is the only way to keep it stable while the blade passes through. Once you accept that the ceiling is the floor of your saw, everything starts to click. We need to make sure we have the right things within reach, so we aren't climbing up and down the ladder all day. You are going to want a miter saw, obviously, but the real secret weapon is a simple piece of scrap wood that we call a fence extension or a stop block. We are going to screw a small strip of wood to the bed of your saw. At the exact distance, the molding sticks out from the wall. This keeps every single piece at the same consistent angle. Without that stop, the molding can rock forward or back just a hair, and suddenly your corners don't line up, and you are reaching for the wood filler. You will also need a finish nailer, preferably an 18-gauge brad nailer. It is small enough that the holes are easy to hide, but strong enough to grab the framing behind the drywall. Grab a tape measure, a sharp pencil, and a solid ladder. I always tell people to check their ladder feet before they start. If you are wobbling while you are trying to hold an 8-foot piece of crown against the ceiling, you are going to make mistakes. Now we have to find the studs. This is where the preparation pays off. I like to take a high-quality stud finder and mark every vertical framing member along the top of the wall, maybe 2 inches down from the ceiling. Since the crown molding is going to cover that area anyway, you can draw right on the wall. But there is a catch. Sometimes the ceiling joists run parallel to the wall you are working on, which means there is nothing to nail into at the top. In those cases, we are looking for the top plate of the wall framing. I usually take a small finish nail and tap it into the wall near the ceiling until I feel it hit solid wood. Once I find that solid backing, I know exactly where my nails need to go. If you just fire nails into the drywall and hope for the best, that molding is going to sag or pull away within a month when the humidity changes. Let's talk about the first piece. We always start with a wall that has two inside corners, if possible. For this first piece, we aren't even going to cut an angle on the ends. We are going to do what is called a butt cut. That means the ends are perfectly square, 90 degrees, and the piece fits tight from one wall to the other. This gives us a solid foundation to work from. When you measure for this, pull your tape tight. I mean really tight. If the measurement is 120 inches, I might even cut it a 16th of an inch long. When you push it into place, it should stay there by itself, just from the tension. You will hear a slight scrape against the side walls as it slides home. And that is a good sound. It means there is no gap. Once that first straight piece is nailed up, we move to the corners. And this is where we use the coping method. You could try to miter both pieces at 45 degrees and hope they meet perfectly, but houses are almost never perfectly square. If you miter both sides, the joint will open up the second the house settles. Instead, we cope the second piece. This involves cutting the end of the molding at a 45-degree angle to reveal the profile, and then using a small handsaw called a coping saw to cut away the back of the wood, following that wavy line the miter cut created. It sounds complicated, but think of it like a puzzle piece. The second piece is going to sit right on top of the face of the first piece. When you do this right, the joint looks seamless, and even if the walls expand or contract, the gap stays hidden. When you are at the saw, remember our rule. Upside down and backward. The decorative top of the molding is touching the flat bed of the saw, and the bottom edge is leaning against the fence. When I'm cutting a left-hand inside corner, I swing the saw to the right. I hold the molding firmly against that stop block we made. You'll feel the vibration of the motor through the handle, and as the blade starts to move through the wood, don't rush it. Let the teeth do the work. If you pull too fast, you might splinter the delicate edges of the profile. I always listen to the sound of the saw. It should be a steady, high-pitched whir. If it starts to bog down or change pitch, you are pushing too hard. Once the cut is made, I take a piece of 220 grit sandpaper and just lightly knock off the burrs. Now, we take that piece to the wall. This is the moment of truth. You are up on the ladder, holding the coped end against the piece we already installed. You want to see how the profile nests. If there is a little bump keeping it from sitting flush, don't panic. This is where the lived experience comes in. You can take a wood file or that coping saw and just shave off a tiny bit of the back of the wood. We call this back beveling. You aren't touching the front edge that people see. You are just removing the material behind it so the front edge can tuck in tighter. When it finally slides into place and the line disappears, it is one of the most satisfying feelings in all of woodworking. It feels like the wood just grew out of the wall. When it comes time to nail, I start in the middle of the board and work my way toward the ends. I place my first nail into the bottom flat of the molding, aiming for that wall stud. You will hear a solid thud when the nail hits the wood. If you hear a hollow pop, you miss the stud. If that happens, don't try to pull the nail out yet. You will just damage the face of the molding. Just leave it and fire another one an inch to the side where the wood is solid. As I move toward the corner, I am constantly checking the fit. I use my fingers to feel the transition between the two pieces. Your eyes can be fooled by shadows, but your fingertips will tell you the truth. If one piece is sitting slightly higher than the other, you can usually tap it into place with the heel of your hand before you fire the final nail. You might be thinking about what happens when you have a wall longer than your longest piece of molding. This is where we use a scarf joint. We don't just butt two pieces together end to end because that line will show up as soon as the paint dries. Instead, we cut both pieces at a 45-degree angle, so they overlap each other. I like to put a little bit of wood glue on that joint. When you nail through both pieces into a stud, the joint becomes almost invisible. I always try to plan my scarf joints so they are away from the main entrance of the room. If you can put them where the light won't hit them directly, they disappear even better. I'll tell you why I prefer to use a bit of construction adhesive in the corners along with the nails. Wood is a living thing. It moves with the seasons. By putting a small dab of glue on those coped joints, you are ensuring that they stay locked together, even when the house breathes. But be careful not to use too much. If it squeezes out onto the face of the molding, wipe it off immediately with a damp rag. If you let it dry, it will ruin your paint finish. As we reach the final corner of the room, you might find that the last piece is the hardest to fit. This is because you are dealing with two coped ends at once. Take your time with the measurements. Measure twice, or honestly, measure three times. If you cut it a hair too short, you have to start all over with a new long piece of wood. If you cut it a hair too long, you can always shave a bit off. I always prefer to be a 1/16 of an inch long. You can flex the board slightly to get the ends into the corners, and then snap it into place against the wall. It's like a spring-loaded fit. Once all the wood is up, the job isn't quite done. This is the stage where the amateurs stop and the pros separate themselves. We have to fill the nail holes and caulk the edges. I use a lightweight spackle for the holes, just a tiny dab on my finger. I press it in and then wipe it flush with a damp cloth, so I don't have to do much sanding. For the long lines where the molding meets the ceiling and the wall, I use a high-quality acrylic caulk. I cut the tip of the tube at a very sharp angle and make the hole very small. You want a bead that is barely there. I run the bead along the crack and then follow behind it with a wet finger, smoothing it out. This hides any tiny gaps where the wall might be wavy or the ceiling has a slight dip. Looking up at the finished product, you'll see how the room has changed. It feels finished. It feels substantial. Those shadows and lines create a sense of history and craft that wasn't there an hour ago. You took a pile of wood and a difficult geometry problem, and you solved it with your hands. There is a quiet confidence that comes from that. You didn't just hide a gap between the wall and the ceiling. You mastered a skill that most people are afraid to even try. Every time you walk into this room and see that perfect corner, you'll remember the vibration of the saw and the way the wood felt as it finally snapped into place.